We are back, friends. Thanks for sticking around here on the Jeff Ferry Show. As promised, we're joined again by John Asimakopoulos, who is the executive director and editor for the Transformative Studies Institute. John, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jeff.
Good to speak with you again. How are you today?
Very good. Nice to be on your show again.
Refresh my listeners' memory. Tell them about the Transformative Studies Institute. What is your mission, and what is it that you folks do over there?
Yes. A number of academics, including myself, artists, musicians, painters, we all got together and we said, look, things are not going too well in this country, despite the Obama presidency, as we all know. And we decided to do something about it. We decided to take theory, which is where the academics come in, and actually put into action, where a lot of the activists also come in, and hopefully inform each other's work.
Wow. That's now, a great concept. How is it working practically?
It's working very well, and the main purpose that we have right now in front of us, or one of our main goals, is to take it to the next level and actually establish a university, a graduate school, that would be tuition-free, not unlike the City University of New York when it was first created back in the 1960s, where very few people remember these days, no one had to pay tuition, versus today where everybody has to pay a lot of money for tuition. So we're thinking about establishing a tuition-free graduate school where people would actually be taught the way academics believe education should be, and not simply given just job training, which unfortunately most universities are all about today. Ergo, the expression, the corporate university that we have. But in addition to that, we also have other goals, which is to also provide policy analysis for various organizations, public organizations, government. We run various programs for the community. There's a lot that we do. And again, the idea is to try to push the United States in a direction where we can catch up with the rest of the world in terms of how we treat our own people, our own citizens. That's one of the main goals that we really do have long term.
Now, you're also dealing with, I was on your site today, and one of the topics being brought up is the whole notion of academic repression, that we're seeing so much pushback from political factors about really sort of reining in what can be openly discussed in the classroom setting.
It is very sad. If there was any space that people would agree one should be able to speak freely and express their ideas without retaliation, it's academia. And unfortunately, what we are witnessing is the exact opposite, that if someone does speak freely, and I'm not going to defend anyone's particular ideologies or perspectives, because that's not the point. The point is to be able to speak freely. That just doesn't happen. If you say anything, if you start attacking the system, if you start becoming a little too dangerous with your critique, or if you simply are not someone that administration is very happy about for any reason, you can be assured, as some of my colleagues unfortunately right now are assured, that you will be fired. They will get rid of you. And we're very angry at this, because when you take away freedom of speech from academics, then you're also taking it away from journalists. Then you're also taking it away from politicians. Then you're also taking it away from the average citizen. And then what are you left with? You're not left with a democracy, that's for sure.
One of your comments, obviously, again, this is someone not necessarily, I necessarily agree with his views on certain topics, but Ward Churchill, just won a case recently, within the last month, actually, that he was fired without cause and improperly at Colorado.
Yes, and again, it's not that we necessarily agree or disagree with what an individual is going to state or claim, in this case, Ward. But we do believe that Ward, as well as anyone else, has a legitimate right to express themselves. And if anyone feels that what they're saying is inappropriate or inaccurate and so forth, it's a very simple solution. You counter what you're hearing with your own arguments. You have a debate. And if somebody's really out there and they're saying things that really just don't make sense, it's going to show. Mm-hmm. You don't have to fire them. We do have a democracy that allows you to have a dialogue. But if you start taking people's employment away because you don't like what they have to say with no debate, no dialogue, then we're down a very slippery slope to oppression. In fact, we do have oppression. So in Ward's case, I personally may not necessarily agree with how he expressed himself, but at the end of the day, he's a legitimate academic, and he should have had the right to say what he had to say, and if it was distasteful, then there are other ways to deal with it. But you don't just fire people because you don't like what they're saying or because a powerful senator in your state decided that he's going to give a call to the college's president and say, this person has to go. That's not much more different from many developing nations where there's anything but democracy, and those who are rich and powerful pretty much decide what gets done by whom and how.
Mm-hmm. And even though Mr. Churchill ultimately won his case, what happened to him is a cautionary tale for other academics who may speak out. And to me, the big fear is when people get into self-censorship, when people are afraid to speak out because of the financial climate we're in right now. Colleges, particularly here in Arizona, our universities are laying people off en masse, and people are afraid to speak their minds in an academic setting, which is just so counter to what academic settings are supposed to be about.
That's absolutely true, and it's getting worse. Mm-hmm. But, of course, no one is going to go and write a paper and publish papers on how they're being muzzled and whatnot, because that's inviting retaliation. Mm-hmm. And, again, when you cannot express your ideas freely in a democratic society, then you have to ask yourself, what kind of society do we really have?
Right, and I think that was the whole point of the free society, is that it wasn't just freedom to make as much money as you wanted to make. It was the freedom of expression and the freedom of ideas, and what that means to our ability to innovate in the world and create in the world.
Well, that's right. And sadly enough, when you do take away these types of freedoms, eventually you will have a declining civilization. Mm-hmm. And without getting too technical about it, if we look around us and just pay attention to how our industries are falling one after the other, how jobs are being lost in the tens of thousands, how we have lost our competitiveness. It wasn't that long ago that the United States accounted for almost half of the world's GDP. Mm-hmm. Now we're a fraction of that. But it all comes back to the basic freedoms that we have that also spark innovation, they spark entrepreneurship, and that's going to be lost. The only freedoms we have today are the freedoms to, in essence, loot society. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not necessarily pro-capitalist myself, but the capitalists of old, at least, were legitimate businessmen. They had the long view. They said, we're going to make an investment today, a significant investment in machinery and people, knowing that there are going to be many profits in the long run. But what you have now is a Gordon Gekko economy, quoting Wall Street from Oliver Stone, which is grab whatever you can grab, and if anybody gets in your way, get them fired, get them taken out, just make sure they're muzzled. And that goes, again, unfortunately, for journalists and many others.
Mm-hmm. And you used an expression there, that one that doesn't seem to be part of the equation in our economy anymore, the long run. No, none of these companies think or most companies and most are the attitude in this country is that we think quarterly. And did we make more money this quarter than we did last quarter? If not, then there's a big problem here. It's not about sustaining, or it's not even about innovation. It's about that quick turnaround, that quick buck.
And it gets even worse for many companies. Their life exists between 9 and 4 o'clock when the stock market is open. Mm-hmm. There have been many discussions in terms of how we compensate our executives. Forget about the fact that there has been absolutely no study to find that these executives really do contribute what they claim to contribute value-wise for their compensation. Mm-hmm. Every study says, given what they have to offer, there's absolutely no reason for them to get paid these obscene amounts of money. But putting that aside, when you're telling an executive, look, you can make a real big bonus in a heartbeat by doing the wrong thing for the short term. Mm-hmm. But in the long term, the company's going to go bankrupt, but don't worry about it. You're not going to be around. You're going to quit. You're going to go and be an executive somewhere else. Then, I mean, then these people are doing what's rational for them, make the big bucks now. But then in the long run, there is no company. There are no jobs for everyone else to have. And the community itself suffers when it sees massive job losses. I mean, all you have to do is take a tour of Detroit, and you realize that you might as well be in a third world nation. Detroit is, I guess, a cautionary tale of where many of our cities are headed.
Wow, and again, I think so much of it just comes down to this short-sightedness on the part of I don't know, is it through our leadership, or is it just something that culturally we've all gotten to this point? I mean, this sort of the whole notion of the capitalist system was that, you know, this idea that people are pursuing their own interests, and if everybody's equally pursuing those same interests, then things kind of balance themselves out. But what we see is sort of a rigged game now, where those in power have amassed so much more control and so much more influence in our government that there's no real playing field.
This was a situation that always existed in the United States and other countries. Mm-hmm. You always had a power elite. You always had a combination of people from the military, from political backgrounds, and industry, to quote Eisenhower's political industrial military complex. Mm-hmm. But what we have seen in the last few decades is that financiers, the financial sector, has pretty much taken over. And everybody sings to their tune. And the financial sector really does think, as we were saying before, in terms of quarters. It does not think in the long run. And it has managed to co-opt the traditional industrial capitalists that did have a long view of things, mm-hmm. by saying to them, well, look, you're going to make more money for your company when the stock goes up. You're going to make more bonus money when the stock goes up. So instead of having an executive running GM thinking about how can I make my cars more fuel efficient, how can I innovate, how can I do whatever I have to do as a car company to be successful, you have them thinking about financial considerations that have absolutely nothing to do with cars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all for the short-term gain.
Right. Well, it's remarkable. Now, you mentioned that you didn't consider yourself necessarily a capitalist. Are you much more, believe much more in a socialist model?
I hesitate to say socialist, mm-hmm. because in the United States, unfortunately...
It shouldn't be a dirty word, but unfortunately it is.
It's a dirty word in America. Yeah. And that's also something that we're trying to do with the Transformative Studies Institute, mm-hmm. which is re-legitimize a left perspective, whether you want to call it socialist, whether you want to call it by any other name. There's nothing wrong with saying, I'm a socialist. In fact, people don't realize that in the United States, there has been a long tradition of socialism. Mm-hmm. We've had some socialist politicians, so we may still have some local socialist politicians. We had entire movements. We had a vibrant communist party, in a good sense, not a bad sense, an American party, not some foreign-controlled organization. But over time, for many reasons that we just can't get into because it would take too long, it's gone away. And through control of the media, those who are in power have managed to shape how we think of things. And one of their accomplishments is to think of anything that is pro-working class, pro-average Joe, mm-hmm. as being bad. And now you have people who are working class saying, well, yeah, I have to vote for the Republican Party, even though it's going to give tax breaks to the very wealthy, but not me. Or it's going to cut social services that I depend on. So we clearly have, again, I hate to use academies, but we have a false class consciousness. A lot of people just don't realize that they would be a lot better off to say, yes, I am a socialist, and yes, I want to have guaranteed health care. I want to have guaranteed housing. I want to have guaranteed education, the basics of life that make us who we are as a civilization.
Exactly. It's remarkable to me how the word gets sort of thrown around. And as somebody who I probably consider myself, I believe in the socialist principles that have helped propel this country. I believe in a really strong safety net, similar to what we have in a lot of European countries. I find it remarkable that elements in this country want to call Obama a socialist. And he does seem so far from I mean, he seems like a very much of a capitalist, very much of a moderate, and not that far left at all, certainly not as far to the left as I am.
Well, unfortunately, I think that the right does not realize that Obama is probably one of their best friends. Mm-hmm. And I mean this metaphorically. Obama is really, as you said, he's really not doing anything fundamental, at least not up to this point. I mean, mm-hmm. what is he really doing? He's bailing out the banks.
Right.
He's not prosecuting anyone that should be prosecuted. And I'm not just talking about the financial meltdown, which was a pure fraud. And at this point, it's public information. And there's data out there where people can realize it was, in fact, fraud. This is not being metaphoric. I'm being mm-hmm. literal. Mm-hmm. So he's not prosecuting the people that were engineering consciously the global collapse of the economy. He's not really interested in maybe prosecuting war criminals from our country, and I don't want to name any more names than that. But what is he really doing? He is trying to save the system that existed from before.
Right.
So, you know, he's a soothsayer as far as I'm concerned. Now, if I see him saying, look, I'm going to take a political hit and I'm going to say, end of story, nationalize health care. We all have a right to that.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. You want to go to college? You go to college. And forget about these loans. Everybody talks about putting more funds into loan programs. And I'm thinking, that's not assistance. If I'm a poor kid and I want to go to college, I'm not going to take out $20,000, $30,000 loans which per year, which I know I'm not going to be able to repay when I graduate because the best job I can find is going to pay me $30,000 a year, and that's before taxes. How about we give people assistance to go to college tuition-free? Like I said, CUNY used to do back in the day. Mm-hmm. People have forgotten these things, that education is a right. It's an obligation, in fact, for anyone that wants to be a member of a democratic society.
Right. Well, the state of California, their college system was free until Ronald Reagan came along and decided he was going to get back at all the hippies who were protesting against him by taking that away. So it's not like this is some absurd outlier from our society. This stuff is really a part of our history.
And that's the great accomplishment of the concentration of the media, which is to destroy historical memory so that we don't know how things were in comparison to today, and then rewrite history and convince people that the way things are now is the only correct way. And anything else outside of the accepted storyline cannot be legitimate. You have to be an extremist. You're not American. You don't love your country. To which I say, saying hurrah, hurrah doesn't make you a patriot. It makes you a follower.
Mm-hmm.
A real patriot criticizes his government or her government and says, how can we make this better? You don't make any kind of government or any kind of institution better by just nodding your head and being a yes man or a yes woman.
Right. Dissent is patriotic. It means that you actually love your country enough to stand up and fight for what you believe its principles are.
And again, that's the perversion of the system today, that we take what suits the power elite, make it legitimate, mm-hmm. dissent that suits them, but any other type of dissent can be good.
Wow. It seems like, I mean, a lot of what you're doing is rethinking labels and rethinking moving forward. But how do we break through the lock we have, that the corporations have, on our dialogue, on our discussion, on the mainstream media?
Well, Jeff, that's where people like you come in, because if we're going to rely on the mass media, there is no hope.
Mm.
They're purchased lock, stock, and barrel by the power elite. The only hope lies in independent media, and it's through independent media that scholars who are courageous enough, journalists that are courageous enough, activists that are always courageous, and people of goodwill can speak the truth. And by speaking the truth and telling our neighbors what we know and sharing it with them and asking them to share it with their friends and neighbors, that's how you bring about change. It's not necessarily something that happens overnight. I don't necessarily believe in overnight change myself, because you never know what you're going to wind up with.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to share what you have, and you have to be courageous enough to say, no, this is what I am. It's not bad. It's okay to be a socialist. It's okay to be left-wing. It's okay to be progressive. It's okay to want nationalized health care, whether you call it socialized health care or not, and stand our ground. Mm-hmm. Very few people in this country are willing to stand their ground in public. They're afraid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for so many years, they managed to demonize the word liberal. you know, that somehow, I mean, I, even beyond, you know, obviously socialist has been a bad word for a long time. Then they managed to demonize the word just liberal, just anything but conservative is somehow less patriotic. It's just been mind-boggling to me how successful they've been at consistently moving the chains on these issues and relabeling. And these labels stick for some reason. I don't understand.
Well, there are academics that have argued that power, in fact, is glue. Mm-hmm. And with that power, you can stick labels on anything you want, and they're going to stick. I'm specifically referring to labeling theory in sociology of deviance. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it seems to be true. Those that have power have more means with which to make whatever labels, whether true or false, stick on individuals, on institutions, on anything. And talking about liberals, I don't think anybody even knows what a liberal is. Ask 10 people, what's a liberal? And see how many different answers you get.
Yeah, that's true. It kind of irked me. The term progressive kind of bothered me at first because it almost seemed like a concession to leaving the liberals who started calling themselves progressives because they had essentially accepted the reframing, accepted the relabeling of that, and decided rather than stand there and fight and explain what it really means, what the principle is, what it stands for, they just decided to pick a new name and move in that direction.
That's true, Jeff, and we've also been criticized for not necessarily stating we are this or we are that, mm-hmm. But choosing instead to say that we are progressive. And it's an ongoing debate in the left-wing community. Now, I'll admit that I, too, was not comfortable, but at the same time, we want to be practical enough to be able to get somebody to at least listen to us. Mm-hmm. What do I mean by this? My goal is not to change how you think, because you already have a way of thinking that's identical to mine, or at least we can see eye to eye in many things. So I'd be preaching to the choir. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to the person that's in middle America who would be far better off with these types of policies and programs that doesn't understand it. But if I go up to that person who may not have necessarily an advanced education, may not even have a basic education, and I start using all these academies terms and all these loaded terms like socialist or communist or Marxist or anarchist or anything like that, they're going to shut me out before I even tell them the next word. So I would rather say, look, I am progressive. That may mean whatever it means to you. But when I have that dialogue going, once this person is engaged, once this person says, all right, so what exactly do you mean? Then I'm going to say, well, I stand for this, this, and this. Do you agree with me? Oftentimes, people will say, well, yeah, I think what you're saying makes sense to me. I actually do agree with you, and this could be Farmer Joe. And then I say, congratulations, you're either a Marxist or a socialist or a communist or an anarchist. And then they smile and they say, gee, I was a socialist all my life and I didn't even know it.
Well, there you go. So just actually avoid the label until you've explained the parameters first. Here's what we stand for. What do you want to call it, you know? Yeah, yeah. Oh, interesting. Wow. John, as always, it's great talking with you today, folks. John is with, again, the name of it is the Transformative Studies Institute. John Simakopoulos is the executive director and editor. John, thanks so much for being with us. Transformativestudies.org is the website. Go check it out yourself. Look into this stuff. Anything you'd like to leave us with before I got to let you go, John?
Educate yourselves, mm-hmm. Find out what's going on in the world, and share it with your friends and family. That's how you're going to make real change, and do not be afraid to protest. Protest is good. Take your family with you. Take your neighbors. Go protest. Go fight for what you believe in. It's good. It's what America is. That's how you are a good American patriot.
Well said, my friend. Thanks for being with us again, John.
Thank you, Jeff. Be
Take
well.
Care. Bye-bye. You too.
Bye-bye.